This is Melissa, and today is the 17th of August, 2025. I hope you're all doing well. I have picked another winter talk from Alan here in the middle of my summer. And this one is from the winter of 2006, December 8. And Alan is, he played you a song about the cold. And then he said, however, I have most of the snowblower reassembled. And I was thinking, yes, and then that died not that long after he reassembled it. I remember that snowblower. It collected dust and rust in a shed. And it was plastic shovels for us for years. And then sometime later, we got another blower. I mentioned it. I said I wasn't going to be promoting. I couldn't remember the name of it. I said, oh, well, I'm not getting a commission on sales. But as I was illustrating the video, I found a picture of that snowblower. And as it turns out, if you're looking for at least what was then a reliable snowblower, it was Arian's. So that was the story of the snowblower. And this is one of those talks, too. Again, this was before I met Alan and actually before I spoke with him, which was in 2007. And in this one, he's just telling us how hard he works and how he does everything, and it's hard for him to get it all done, and he does all his cooking, and, you know, and this would be one of those talks where I would listen and go, why is no one cooking for him? Why is nobody up there helping him? And, you know, so anyway, those are the things I think about when I am listening for talks to replay. But I mentioned in the book club talk that we had yesterday, which was a wonderful recording that was led by the discussion led by Andrew, and he did a great job. I've done a real history with him and his wife, Elizabeth, and they're lovely. And it was just full of great information and his good thoughts and thinking on it. But as I was listening to him deliver that, and then we were discussing it afterwards, I thought, you know, this is my weeks unfold in a way that I call flow and little serendipities and synchronicities and just lots of good things where I'm thinking about something and then boom, something else that's so closely related pops up and it all just kind of fits together. I was thinking a lot about information overload and about circles within circles and inner circles and outer porticos and the way that Alan would describe how information is. They use a term nowadays, siloed. You know it if you need to know it. And we're just kept in echo chambers is another way of putting it. And By design, there's just so much yelling and screaming, and I told you, and I've warned you, and we said, and it's fear-mongering, it's gold and silver selling, and Alan touched on that again in this talk. And so you'll see, if you're listening closely, you'll find those little synchronicities, like his mention about Peter Wright and Spycatcher. This came up in a recent talk that I posted as someone that Alan would point to as a true whistleblower and the way that he was persecuted for that. He mentions David Kelly. This came up in a video that I just illustrated and put up in Substack for the book club. So the point that I was making last week and that is still on my mind is that information overload is, it's a technique. And it, as Alan said in that talk, it's weaponized when you get so many stories. They don't have to be conflicting versions. It's just a lot of them. And it's about places or people or events that are happening that we have no control over. He said that's weaponized. This is weaponized. And we're getting so much of that right now. So I don't need to talk about Trump and Putin meeting to talk about, you know, a Ukraine ceasefire. This is all just, I mean, who knows what's happening in the Ukraine? I don't. It's, you know. So the one thing that I will mention this week is, okay, yes, we're under tyranny. Wow. Is this surprising? It shouldn't be. And so the redux that I'm putting up today is from December 8, 2006, Kings, Advisors, and Cunning Cons. And I think that Alan beautifully lays it out here for us, how it works, how kings, and that includes presidents, have advisors. He gets into some really interesting things that I've been thinking about a lot, which is, what are the advisors advising people on? I've mentioned not too long ago that I was fascinated to think about John Dee in terms of the intelligence that he was giving Queen Elizabeth I. Where did that intelligence come from? He was, you know, calling down angels and demons, you know, that he was practicing alchemy. That was an intelligence gathering source. So if there's two words that are a good subtitle for this blurb, it would be Mystery Babylon. An ancient religion, an ancient system, a deviant priesthood down through time. And we are living in our time when our so-called heads of state receive the same interesting pieces of intelligence from sources. You know, we can talk about intelligence agencies, but Alan is pointing out here odd things like astrology, having charts done. But he's also talking about how this is woven in with predictions that are mystical, that aren't really predictions. You know, oh, so-and-so gets assassinated, and so-and-so called it. You know, and in this case, it's Nostradamus. Ooh, he called that one. Well, you know, clearly it was a planned assassination, so it wasn't a stretch, it wasn't a leap of, it wasn't a big deal to call that. It wasn't some kind of supernatural gift. That's what I'm saying. And that takes me to another thing, another topic that comes up here. So when you're speaking of Mystery Babylon and kings and their cunning cons, we have to think of pirates at that level, because this is what this is. You know, piracy is when you take resources that don't belong to you. When you wage war for resources that don't belong to you, that is piracy. And in here, Alan is talking about how the world is run on an agenda, an actual real agenda, which is a long-term business plan. We can call it prophecy, we can call it predictions, or we can call it a long-term business plan. And the profane, who they like to think that we are, can't figure anything out, but the wise man does. So we get this, I can't give it to you in the Latin, but we get, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Well, often this is explained by saying, oh, well, if you've had one of your eyes poked out, you're blind in one eye and you wear a patch, you know, like a pirate, or you're missing a limb or whatever, then you have to make up for your handicap with other, you know, you've got other skills that kick in. So if everybody else is blind and you've got one eye, you've got a huge advantage.
We sail tonight for Singapore. Take your blankets from the floor. Wash your mouth up by the door. The whole town's made of iron ore. Every witness turns to steam. They all become Italian dreams. Fill your pockets up with earth. Get yourself a dollar's worth. Away, boys. Away, boys. Heave away. The captain is a one-armed dwarf. He's throwing dice along the wharf. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. So take this ring. We sail tonight for Singapore. We're all as mad as hatters here. I've fallen for Tawny Moore, took off to the land of Nod, drank with all the Chinamen, walked the sewers of Paris. I drank along a colored wind, I dangled from a rope of sand. You must say goodbye to me.
That's one way of looking at it, and that is the very standard way of explaining that little saying that Alan has said before. The one-eyed man is also a way of describing the wise man who sees with his third eye. Little things like this stick with me because it ties it back for me right now with what I'm thinking a lot about in terms of information overload. And I've said this recently, I've said it in book club, and I've said it in other places. If Alan started talking and telling people what was going on, lo, those many years ago, and our understanding of what he was saying, and our ability to change ourselves and act on it, was contingent on how much we could, like I said last week, stuff our minds with data, how many books we could read, and how many of the great thinkers we could, you know, quote, and then we'd have it all figured out. No, that's what they're talking about when they say the profane can't figure anything out, but the wise man does. So maybe they're thinking of it like Freemasonically or Mystery School. The alchemists are thinking of the advantage that they can have over us. They can con us. But if we think about it in terms of gathering wisdom, this is an image that sticks with me from the video that Alan Watt made, the Reality Check 2, where there's an image there. It's about feeding your mind, but it isn't just about feeding your mind data. It's about the reflection. It's about that, well, third eye, if you will. I have said, you know, yes, if it was contingent, our freedom, our ability to cut through this and get through this, and for some of us to break through, then it would have just been cruel for Alan to come out and talk about it. Oh, well, you know, if you read this huge pile of dusty old books, well, you too can do, you know. No, it's much simpler than that, and it's much more personal. It's desire. This is a word that keeps coming up in thinking about and listening to talks that Alan has done, and particularly in book club, his conversation with Jackie. Alan makes the point that, yes, we can know. The desire has to be deep inside of us to know truth. And knowing truth is different than just knowing a fact or knowing about the facts about the agenda. In fact, it's very different. And so that's why of late I haven't spent a lot of time talking about news stories. But okay, there you go. Yes, it's true. Trump has federalized Washington, D.C. He has taken over the policing. And so the federal government has said that they control the city of D.C.'s police. And the city of D.C.'s, I guess, police department has sued the federal government. You can't do this. And Trump said in a news conference, well, you know, if it works in D.C., then we're going to take it to Chicago and New York. And he starts, you know, talking about all of the cities that the federal government might take over. And people are crying tyranny and fascism. And, you know, it's like, I understand it. But if we really understand what's going on and what this agenda is about, are we surprised? One of the most important parts about phasing out the old and bringing in the new is to create, remember, it's order out of chaos, right? So create as much chaos as you possibly can. And chaos includes presenting the public, the profane, with the strong man. He's the strong man, and he's the strong man that met with another strong man up in Alaska, and these two strong men, you know, and people are shaking their fists, and, you know, they're protesting, we don't want a king, we didn't vote for a king, but that's where we are, because we truly are at the end of an age and at the beginning of a new age, and that new age brings with it a whole new system, and it will be a whole new way of living, and it will be a new religion, and the other things will fade away. So people say, well, don't be pessimistic, and you got to give people hope. There's two separate things here that we're talking about. You as an individual have an opportunity to retain your mind. You have an opportunity to know yourself, to understand yourself, to achieve consciousness, if you will. That is a victory. I'd say, I think it is. So, you know, I had a lot of things on my mind today that I wanted to talk about, but the book club recording was, it was great. It was really long. It was fantastic. And I, over at Substack, will be posting a massive video in a while, in a few weeks, probably get this one up because I'm one behind on the videos. And that took up a good portion of the day. So, and it was good. You know, for me, it was very stimulating and interesting and fascinating, and I enjoyed it. So some of the things that I was going to talk about today, I'll hold for another time. But one thing that I will say is this was what was really on my mind. I don't have Alan's years of knowledge gathering from the dusty old books, and you all know that, so that's obvious. But what I do have is a real sense of what is at stake, and also, in a way, how much time I have. In the UK, they've got this bill, I think that it's had the king's assent, the royal assent, whatever, you know, that means the king has said, yep, this can be passed, it can be a bill. And so the overview of this, it's the digital ID, The government is enabling the use of trusted digital identity services in the UK. And digital identities give people, they give people another way to securely prove things about themselves, such as who they are or what their age is, without having to present physical documents. Okay, so it's all about making it easy for me. If you've scanned your driving license to open a bank account, use your passport and an automated border gate, or used your face to unlock your phone, you're already familiar with some of the technologies used in digital identity services. A digital identity is a digital representation of your identity information, like your name and age. Okay, right, we know what that is. So that's happening in the UK. I think I was going to try to give you a bill number here, but you can find it. It's the digital ID in the UK. Now, this is also taking root. Here, this is from biometricupdate.com. In April of this year, digital IDs take root in U.S. as states and federal agencies chart uncertain paths. In January, then-President Joe Biden issued the sweeping executive order, strengthening and promoting innovation in the nation's cybersecurity. Okay, so that's what that was. And I think it's Executive Order 14144. This included a direct mandate for federal agencies to prioritize privacy-preserving digital identity systems. Does that sound like just what I was reading out of the UK? Mobile driver's licenses, these are MDLs, and electronic identity documents were explicitly mentioned as key components in his last-minute modernization push. Skipping a little bit here, it says the Trump administration has decided to maintain this executive order. They haven't done anything to promote or expand it, but they also haven't gotten rid of it. And this is very extensive, bringing in the digital ID with expanded capabilities and so forth. And I will post this here so that you can look at it. I won't read it. But one thing that is also pretty clear about Trump is that he has expanded the surveillance of me. So we know about Palantir. We've heard about Peter Thiel. We understand how Palantir is being used in Israel, but it's also being used at home. And AI, what do we think all these data centers are for, really? Is it so that we can have better conversations with our ChatGPT? I'm also going to share a couple of articles that have come in about people falling in love with their chatbot and, you know, having these relationships, spending 50 hours a week talking to it. You know, it's... I'm going to post some of those for you to look at and see. So that's where we are. And I get these letters from Prince, the short letters, which I enjoy. And, you know, I think the last one I got, he said something like, you know, the computer people are goners. So I think this was a very long way of me saying is that more and more in my hopefully reasonably short intros, I am going to be giving you some meaty things about what I think about holding on to our consciousness, retaining our humanity, not becoming overwhelmed or drowning in information overload. I know that my window with you is not a big one, because I will not be providing a fingerprint or a facial scan or an iris scan so that I can maintain a digital presence. That is not going to happen. So for as long as I can, I will share what I can about Allen and what I learned from him and what I am still learning from him and what I hope will be hopeful and helpful to you and not add to the overwhelm of information overload. And there's a key thing here too. Allen talks about something that I've been touching on a few times recently in this talk, where he says, if I can find it, maybe I can. Confusion is a term often given to Satan or Lucifer, even though these were both originally different entities in olden times. The confusion, an author of confusion, was the term used because that's what it all leads to, massive confusion. Everyone fights everyone else and blames everyone else, always being partly right. Now, this just came after I could have started with what came first, huh? But people who point fingers all over the world often have lots of material, true material to go by. It's the Jews, it's the Jesuits, it's the fundamental Christians, it's the Muslims, and they've all got it partly right. Because at the top of all these groups, you have the mystery religion running them. And the mystery religion or a brotherhood worldwide and always have been. That's the trick of it. That's why Mystery Babylon was called Mystery Babylon. To try and define it was difficult. They had many priesthoods. And we were talking today about the pyramid, the four sides that you don't, and you, but don't forget the bottom. That's a fifth side. And what is that? And we had a long, interesting discussion about what it might be. And then, of course, there's the top. So, Allen gave us the bird's eye view. I will continue bringing you Allen for as long as I possibly can. Thank you so much for your support. I am making the Substack a little bit better. I'm learning about organization and putting things into categories and so forth. So hopefully, I didn't realize how much I had posted there in a short amount of time. And so it had become unwieldy really quickly. So I did a little tidying up there today. I also wanted to mention quickly regarding Substack that last Monday afternoon, I received a message from Nick Hayes, Hayes Reviews, and he said, I have selfish reasons for asking this. He's a new father, and that's, you know, a very hands-on job. And he said, I have selfish reasons for asking, but it would be great if you did audio versions of the Not Sure pieces. And that way I could listen to them because I don't have a lot of time for reading. And I got that message about 4:30 Monday afternoon. And by 6:30, I had a couple of them done and one of them posted on Substack. I said to Nick, that's a great idea. I've been looking for something to add to the paid subscription section. And so that's something I have, you know, other ideas that I want to do. I've got the time capsules that I'm doing, and those are for everyone. And those are little excerpts from Alan Watt's talks from the beginning of, you know, the big Operation C in February of 2020. So a year's worth of excerpts, and I've posted 9 of those time capsules so far, and lots of other things there. But thanks to Nick for suggesting that. And if some of you are interested, you can go and check out those. If you've got a subscription, you can check out the, and it's paid, you can check out the Not Sure audios. And of course, the Not Sure pieces are on the website, the written ones for free download. There's a little button there, so just wanted to mention that. I also want to remind you that there is no better education, in my opinion, than Alan Watt. There is no better source of truth. Not just facts and data overload or something that you can use to shore up your argument about, oh, it's the Jews, it's the Jesuits, it's the, you know, Masons or whatever. But truth, that cuts through that bird's eye view truth. And those are the Cutting Through volumes 1, 2, and 3, and Waiting for the Miracle that we're having such a rich discussion on since May of this year, and we'll be continuing at least till the end of this year talking about that. And the flash drives that I've done, I will tell you this, I don't stop very often to think about what I do, what I make, what I write. I just keep going. But when I stop to think about the flash drives, the beauty of them, and yes, I had help from artist volunteers, but they're beautiful. They're beautifully packaged. It's all of Alan's materials except for the books. You've even got the Christmas guitar pieces in there. I will just say this. I'm very proud of what I did with them. I think they're beautiful, and I'm so pleased that I have them. They're, I think, a great price. 7 flash drives, $100 each, or $550 for all of them. And I think it's essential library material. And I'm not fear-mongering here. Alan gets into that with, oh, buy tents, buy underground shelters, buy dried food, buy, all the stuff that Patriot Radio does. And I don't worry that much about my dried bean stalks. What I do consider is, how much of Alan Watt can I bring you every single day until the day they say, we're going to need your iris scan to continue. So until then, I'm all yours. And thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Hi, folks. This is Alan Watt. And it is December the 8th, 2006. Last night, it began to warm up to about 15 below centigrade. And then when I woke up this morning, it was 30 below. It plummeted again, with a cold front coming in. And these are definitely unusual temperatures for this time of year. It rose up to about 10 below during the day, but at the same time, a wind came up and made it feel much colder.
Time. All you need is time to make me bend. Give it a try, don't be rude. Put it to the test and I'll give it right back to you. It's cold on the shoulder and you know that we get a little older every day. Kick it around, take it to town. Try to defy what you feel inside. You better be strong. Your love belongs to us. It's cold on the shoulder. You know that we get a little older every day. All I need is trust. All I need is trust to make it sure. I don't want to know everything you've done. If you get a tip, then tell it to the Eskimos. It's cold on the shoulder.
However, I have most of the snowblower reassembled. And for those who have done this kind of tinkering, you probably noticed that nothing is made in any practical manner. It isn't that after all this time of engineering and degrees and expertise, they can't design things to be practical and long-lasting, or even practical to work on. Everything is deliberately made in this system to be difficult to work on. They're still using bent wire to move governors for your carburetor on these machines. They haven't changed them in 80 odd years. And nothing, of course, is made to last. That's the key to it. because the marketing companies and the engineers work hand in glove. They build the flaws into them, and they also know how long a particular machine is going to be used, how many years it will last, and how many parts they can sell for certain parts over the years. And that's how they make a lot more extra money, is by selling parts, which they know will break, you see, after a year or two. The world truly is meant to frustrate you. The system is not meant to give you peace, and it isn't that they couldn't make things in a more practical fashion or make them to last. I'd also like to talk now about some of the people who contact me who are in a process of waking up in a shock because they've tuned into shortwave or some program that goes on about the Patriot business, basically, and it freaks them out when things start to make sense because the information they're hearing. But they get caught up in the hype as well of the Patriot business, which it is a business, first and foremost. And secondly, I think it's designed not to give you the answers or the whole truth. It's meant to catch those who are trying to wake up and get them into a tizzy, a panic tizzy of consuming and buying all the stuff for survival that you could ever imagine. I know people who phone me up and they'll tell me all the different stuff they've got and bought over the years from AM and shortwave radio, from Patriot stations, including underground shelters. And they have all the gizmos and all the gold and silver and all the everything you can imagine for every possible scenario. At least the scenarios that they've been told about. I always tell them the ones that you're not prepared for are the ones which will be used. But they have all this stuff, and I've said to them, how big a truck would it take to move all that stuff if you had to move in a hurry? And they go into another shock because they have never thought about it. Some of them would need a 5-ton truck to move all this stuff. And somehow they think, you see, they'll be left where they are as there's some kind of chaos reigning, and they'll be all set up to get through anything. It's never dawned on them that they might have to or will get moved off their property, or they'll have to go anyway. And I tell them, whatever you can stick in a big rucksack is but all you'll manage to get away with. That's if you can even get gas to go anywhere, or a road that doesn't have checkpoints all along the way. But the panic business, which goes unfortunately hand in glove with the Patriot business, caters to all of this sort of thing. And you'll always find, apart from all the stuff they sell, like tents and all the camo gear and the boots and the gold and silver, etc., 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 and the rations that they sell, probably old rations that are they've jacked the price up and they're obsolete, these ones. You can make your own rations up by simply looking at old books. Get some beans and put them in jars. But the people truly have been stampeded for years and years and years into the only information sources they've been given. And remember, the all-seeing eye doesn't miss anything. And I tell them, why do you think, out of all the controlled media, they would miss the shortwave or the AM stations? It hasn't. What's out there is authorized to be there. And as I've said before and said the other night, I've talked to very elderly people who followed this all their lives and gone in the roller coasters of ups and downs and learned all the names on a daily basis of who's passing what bill, who's doing what to whom, and what country's doing what to what, and on it goes, and it's just data, data, data. It's irrelevant who they bring forth to pass a bill. if that person wasn't there, someone else would have been picked to come forth in his place. Another thing I would like to warn people about are famous people who come on some shows claiming to belong to specific intelligence agencies. Now, for those who want to look at the history of Peter Wright, who belonged to MI5, and he worked with MI6 as well for a while, he did come out with a book called The A to Z of Spy Catching. The first one was Spy Catchers. And he got that published under a lot of flack from the British government, because, you see, anyone who works for the governments of all the countries swears an Official Secrets Act. Not only not to divulge the secrets while they're working, but not to divulge them after they've left their employment for up to 30 years. And there's penalties. And we know from Kelly, who was scheduled to go to court on what he knew after 9/11 in England, the man who knew that he'd be killed, and he was killed and left in the woods, as he said in a letter he would be, he'd be found in the woods dead. He was. That's known to all of these agents who are working or have worked for the government. They cannot disclose what they have for 30 years. Now, Peter Wright tried to get his second book out, called The A to Z of Spy Catching, after Spy Catchers. And Margaret Thatcher got him into prison, and she had him in the High Court of England, and they seized all the books, The A to Z of Spy Catching, because he disclosed names of big players who were there all through the Cold War, all very famous British people, lords, etc. And Margaret Thatcher also had all his books seized in that particular publication, the second one. And they were pulped. They were mushed back into pulp. You can't just come out and start talking. It doesn't work that way. So Peter Wright went off to Australia, and he was writing there. I know this. And a lot of material written up, and then he died. So be careful of those who are presented to you as being big ones up there. Why are the big ones up there coming on certain shows which supposedly are exposing the system, when these people not only are dedicated to the system, they are sworn, legally sworn to the system? Just a bit of caution. As far as actors, etc., go, I understand them coming on some shows, because it is understood that even though they're saying the same thing as the next door plumber or electrician, because people are taught to follow the stars, they'll listen to the famous star speaking and saying the same things. We've been trained that we are nobodies. That's why we look up to this, to people who are rich and famous. Rich becomes first. That's most important, because you can't be famous as well without being rich. You can be infamous, but you can't be famous, because the system tells us that those who get up the top accumulate the money, they're rich, they're therefore famous. As I say, it's an anti-human system. So please don't get caught up in the panic which ensues when you, for the first time, turn on some station you've never listened to before and hear some truths coming out. There's no left-wing party, there's no right-wing party, there's no up-or-down party, there's no green party. It's all one big system. And the trick, as Marx wrote about and Lenin wrote about and many others wrote about, the trick to controlling people is to get them to join groups, put themselves in a camp. It's the first trick of any war too. before they had standing armies, get you to join a camp, put the leader in, put your own leader in, and now one person can control thousands or millions. That's the trick of getting to join parties. That also goes for the politicians who lower down on the scale, who join the party and get into parliaments or government. Their job is to applaud, like trained seals at a circus, the head of the party. That's their job. They all know it. If they want to get on in life, you don't go against the party leader, because your career is doomed. So no matter what they've told their constituents, that goes out the window. And they will tell their constituents, I'm sorry, I can't vote the way you'd like me to, I must vote with the party. So one man at the head of the party can control thousands and thousands of people. That goes with everything. That's why you don't join groups and parties with their particular agendas and formats and policies, because you're being controlled. They could not have gone so far in the system without the creation of parties. People think that the party that's in the US right now are just the warmongers, and they've let us know that they're warmongers, it's no secret, and profiteers, but pirates are warmongers and profiteers. And the last party that was in, Bill Clinton and his group, were no different. People forget the first thing that Clinton did when he got in was to actually tell the FBI to give them all their opponents' names, all those who did not want to go along with Clinton and his agenda. They wanted all those, and they got them. They had access to FBI computers on private information on private individuals. And then they put Janet Reno in charge. Strange character, very, very strange character, and we know all about her. And then they had the war on Waco, the Branch Davidians, where they had a ritual sacrifice at the end when they burned the whole huge farmhouse down, and the SWAT team members in the black clad outfits were seen, and it's on tape, to be bowing to the flames at the end as it went down, the worship of fire. That's part of the ritual. And that was your sacrifice for the upcoming agreement signed, the historic agreement, because that's where they chose eventually for the first open agreement signing on the United Americas. They always have a sacrifice before on the land or the land around it before they actually make the signature and have the parades. We're living amongst a religion that goes all the way back and before the creation of Babylon. Prior to governments as we know them today, kings and queens were installed on, and they had to be obedient to the universal church, the Catholic Church at the time. They had priests attached to them who reported right to the Vatican. So the Vatican then could make or break kings and queens. But you also had other policymakers, advisors, like the Francis Bacons and Machiavellis and so on that I mentioned the other night. And every country in Europe had these advisors. Yet a topic that's often left out is that some of the advisors, even to some of the popes, came out with the old trademarks, the MOs, of the mystery religion. The mystery religion, all down through the ages, have been into building. They go into countries and they build, either by using an army to conquer first, but they always bring in a system of money, then taxation, which then pays the labor, rather than using slaves all the time. And they're the big builders, they do building projects. We see them today really going to town, because the only honeypot in the country, in any country, is the taxpayer's honeypot. They want to get their hands into that. That's where the big money is. And the money is never accounted for. There's always money that goes missing. They know that. The sharks who get up know all of this stuff, because they're sharks. Sharks know this type of stuff. They smell it. They smell the opportunities. So the MOs down through the ages are the big building projects. They create cities where you'll have a small elite with the masses of wealth, incredible wealth, who will run nations economically and trade. But you also have the biggest crime at the bottom, run by the same bunch, because you must keep control of everything. Cause and effect. For every action is an equal and opposite reaction. Pass laws, which they do, that's another MO, making the laws, systemizing things, standardizing laws, knowing there'll be an opposite reaction, where people go into the underworld to survive, the underworld being crime and petty crime. And so they run that too. Again, put your men in to create an organization of crooks, like a mafia. They weren't the first. And then put your own men in as the bosses, and you can run both sides. And they also have prostitution, legal drugs and illegal drugs. So they run pharmacology and the illegal drug system, and they also run the alternative drugs, the herbals. Kings and queens used to also have as advisors, and some popes, as I say, astrologers. That came from Babylon too, and it was pre-Babylonian. The greatest way to influence people is through their imagination of what is to come. And kings and queens and those in power are hooked on this kind of thing, because they would love to know the future, to ward off any usurpation of their powers or any overthrow. They'd like to know what happens, so the astrologers came in. And if you read the history of astrologers in Europe in the Middle Ages onwards, you'll find out who they were. You'll find out they all travelled abroad a lot to other parts of Europe. These astrologers also met together in Europe. In other words, you had a club of astrologers, a society is the key, who went back and dictated what was going to happen to the kings and queens in their countries. And the kings and queens would follow the suggestions. And what you realize you're up against here is an organization, organized astrologers who are advisors to the highest people in the land, who are then following policy which the astrologers suggest. Very clever. And it hasn't stopped. If you look at all of the various presidents and prime ministers down through history, you'll find they've all been gullible to this kind of stuff, and they've called on the advice of these higher astrologers, and they follow the stars, the astros, that follow it to the letter. An interesting little blurb put out by Francis Bacon is on this very topic. And he should know. He was talking about prophecies in his time. And he said, "When I was in France, I heard from one Dr. Pina that the Queen Mother, who was given to curious arts, caused the King, her husband's nativity, to be calculated under a false name. And the astrologer gave a judgment that he should be killed in a duel, at which the queen laughed, thinking her husband to be above challenges and duels, but he was slain upon a course at tilt," that's jousting, the splinters off the staff of Montgomery going in at his beaver. That's about the headpiece, the helmet. Hit him in the eye. The trivial prophecy which I heard when I was a child and Queen Elizabeth was in the flower of her years was, now listen to this, when hemp is spun that is, England's done. Very interesting, because you see, spelling had been finalized at that time for a few hundred years. In the late 1800s they began to redo spelling of the words. In those days the spelling was done to the codes of the period. They've been updated just like you update the programs on a computer. So he spells hemp, H-E-M-P-E, and spone is S-P-O-N-N-E. Now all of the people at the court of Queen Elizabeth the First, interestingly enough, were into cannabis and hemp. Even the members of the Rosicrucian Lodge were into this. They've always been into drugs, and they've gone into one of the houses of, I think it was Raleigh, and they've scraped the beams, historical houses, they've scraped the beams and found the residue of this particular drug. When hemp is spun, England's done. And he goes on to say, whereby it was generally conceived that after the princess had reigned, which had the principal letters of that word hemp, which were Henry, Edward, Mary, Philip, and Elizabeth, England should come to utter confusion, which, thanks be to God, is verified only in the change of the name, for that the king's style is now no more of England, but of Britain, because at the same time we know that in Queen Elizabeth the First reign, John Dee suggested that they should call it Britain and the British Empire. He actually called it Brightish, B-R-Y. But going back to this prophecy, just look over it again. And he's tongue-in-cheek with his little statement here, because he knew darn well that the King of France was going to be killed at Joust. And they brought forth Nostradamus, you see, to give the prediction. That's what launched him into fame. And the King of France's wife was Catherine de Medici, who was steeped up to her eyeballs in potions and astrology and magic. Very interesting family, the Medici, because they've been into lending to countries and empires as far back and before the Roman Empire. Very, very important. But also the statement to say that this astrologer had given a prediction, or at least Nostradamus did, a prediction that the king would be killed at Joust, when a splintered lance would enter, because of the beaver, you know, it went through the eye of the king. Now the guy who did it was Montgomery of Scotland. Montgomery's and the Sinclairs were the heads of the lodges that took over from the Knights Templars, and the Montgomery's and the Sinclairs of Scotland were the sort of Praetorian guard of the kings and queens of France for a long, long time. Montgomery did know what he was doing, because when you go into the Tower of London and different places in England, they have books there under glass of training manuals of how knights used to train, and these guys could literally put the point of a lance at full gallop through an apple. They were so accurate, so they knew what they were doing, and that's why Nostradamus could predict what was going to happen, because it was planned that way. That's how clever things are. For Joe Average, who wouldn't ever come to that conclusion, he must think, my goodness, it's magic, it's a gift. And Nostradamus, we're told, once again used to take drugs, narcotics, stare at his bowl of water, and tell us all about the future. And there have been so many books published ever since on the quatrains, as they call them. There's a type of poetry you rhymed in, of the future, the centuries, it's called. And yet, all of that is the exoteric, because the esoteric, to get the esoteric, you have to have the code, the key, to unlock them. And Nostradamus said that himself. So the gullible fall for the exoteric every time, whether it be religion or this other more ancient religion, which has its MOs, as I've discussed already, including astrology, magic, talismans, and all ways of predicting the future. You can predict it when you've planned it that way, you see. It's not too difficult. You might say, really, I would rather say that England was done when hemp certainly was smoked in England back in the 60s and 70s, because it really did a big change then. That's when everything changed. In the so-called New Age movement, many, many books will appear in the shelves to make a quick buck on prophecies. And they're full of old stuff that was used over the centuries. But you see, deception is done not by giving out facts, it's by withholding other parts or other facts from the public. And then it can be very misleading. Here is one, for instance, that was used in the 1500s. "They shall be seen upon a day between the Ba and the May, the black fleet of Norway, when that is come and gone, England build houses of lime and stone, for after wars you shall have none." Now that's been used even up to present times, talking about, oh, during the Cold War, the Christian fundamentalists on the shortwave radio stations used to go to town and all these old prophecies, and they'd say, oh, that's the Russian fleet coming over, you see. Now, the only Russian fleets I ever saw were fishermen, because they used to go all across the all along the coastline of Scotland and do their fishing, and some of them even came inland to the bars and pubs. It was quite a common thing for them to do and chat with the locals. And up in Stornoway and the Orkneys, they were almost part of the family to the people there, as they would come and go and get well known to the locals. But this particular prophecy, as I say, was used over and over again, and it isn't until you see the rest of the story that it makes sense. Now Bacon goes on to say it was generally conceived to be meant of the Spanish fleet that came in 88, for that the King of Spain's surname, as they say, is Norway. Then it makes sense, you see. And as always, it was written about a year after the Spanish fleet came over. There's nothing new in this, and you'll find the same thing in religion. For instance, it's accepted in Judaic teaching, rabbinical teaching, that a rabbi who's well trained could write in the manner of a famous personage in the Bible. In other words, by knowing that person's mentality, their mindset, their emotional set, their legality set, they could emulate that person and write more. And it was accepted as being written by the original, because it was written in the exact same manner. Today they wouldn't do that, they do channeling instead. The only problem is you'd have to go off to Zeta Reticuli or somewhere to find out what was going on. And there's lots of those too. The fantasy, as Weishaupt said, is a tremendous tool to draw people into organizations and then guide them along a certain way of thinking, enacting, behaving, and accepting, especially the changes that are being made around them. it's easier to accept a change when you think, well, either God's prophesied it, he's going to make it happen, so what can you do, or else some magic guys are predicting it. They won't tell you what's behind it all, because they can't talk about a God or anything. It's just a prophecy. And the people still fall for it, and they think, well, I guess there's nothing you can do, it's going to happen. But this is the oldest con game in the book. As I say, it's so easy a day or so after a news break on something for people to come out with their prophecies, which are 2 or 3 years later get written into books. It's been prophesied beforehand, before the events. So sure, you can check on the events, they happened, and you say, my goodness, this guy said that. Well, sure, he said it, but he said it after the event. This is the con game of there's nothing new, and it was actually more common in the past where they would simply put a false date on their prediction so it would appear to be written before the event. So simple to do, and yet the gullible want to believe this kind of stuff so readily. Now, talking about superstition and New Age theology and so on, take it from an expert. Who was Francis Bacon? Francis Bacon was at the court of England. He knew about these characters, he mixed with them, they all belonged to the same lodge. But even here, in the Novum Organum, New Organon, here's what he says about it. And remember, nothing has been more studied than man and woman on this planet for thousands and millennia, maybe even millions of years, for all we really know. But the corruption of philosophy by superstition and a mixture of theology is far more widely spread and does the greatest harm, whether to entire systems or to their parts. For the human understanding is obnoxious to the influence of the imagination, no less than to the influence of common notions. For the contentious and sophistical kind of philosophy ensnares the understanding, but this kind, being fanciful and tumid and half poetical, misleads it more by flattery. For there is in man an ambition of the understanding, no less than of the will, especially in high and lofty spirits. The same technique has been taught or used by gurus down through the thousands of years. Those in the mystery religion of today classify themselves as gods. Those who have achieved the high status, the high degrees, completed the circle, 360 degrees, 6 and 3, 9. 9 is completion in the Kabbalah. They believe themselves to be gods. And here's Bacon basically talking about it, if you understand what he's really saying. He goes on to say, and it appeals to the ego. That's what he's saying there. It appeals to the ego. That's how they're enticed into the New Age. You could be new and improved, pretty well better than the $6 million man. Of this kind of thing, we have amongst the Greeks a striking example in Pythagoras, though he united with it a coarser and more cumbersome superstition. Now, Pythagoras, apart from giving us the tone and the ton, the weight and the sound and the shade of colour, the tone of colour, this all comes from Pythagoras, who got it from the Egyptians because he studied with the Egyptians most of his life. And then he went off to found a school in Crotona, and he recruited the younger people of nobility. And if you really do your homework, you'll find that it was a secret society. You had a vow of silence, just like the later monks, and the monks who came into monasteries in the Christian era adopted all the same stuff, you see. And Pythagoras had a vow of secrecy for a year. They couldn't speak for a year or communicate to each other. In fact, I think with Pythagoras it was up to 4 years. The Essenes, 2,000 years ago in the Middle East, who probably came from Egypt, had the same system. And back to Pythagoras was training these young nobility people and give them a fantastic education, mind you, to go off and take over the government, revolutionary, that is. And that's why his school was burned down, and is unknown yet, at least to the public, if he ever was caught and killed. They speculate about it, but he wasn't the first or the last one to come out of Egypt and do the same kind of thing. Egypt always sent out the high initiates back to their own countries, or at least their empires, like the Grecian Empire, to cause revolutions and to bring in the same system worldwide. So Bacon says, of this kind we have amongst the Greeks a striking example in Pythagoras. He goes on to talk about a coarser, more cumbersome superstition. Another in Plato and his school, more dangerous and subtle. And it's true, because Plato was a student of Socrates. Now Socrates did the same thing. All these men had studied in Egypt, all these famous ancient Greek philosophers. And Socrates is always played down as a martyr by the mystery schools which give you your books. But Socrates himself was doing the same thing. He was training the young, the youth of the nobility, primarily, including the women, after they went through their vow of secrecy, celibacy, and then silence, to go off and marry other upper members of government. And then they could sway the course of government, the direction of government. And Socrates was made to drink the hemlock for doing so. And I must admit, there's an awful lot of truth in what Socrates said about the world in general, but what they generally neglect to give you is the rest of the story, as always. Continuing with Bacon, he says, it shows itself likewise in parts of other philosophies in the introduction of abstract forms and final causes and first causes, with the omission in most cases of causes intermediate and the like. Upon this point, the greatest caution should be used, for nothing is so mischievous as the apotheosis of error, and is a very plague of the understanding for vanity to become the object of veneration. Yet in this vanity, some of the moderns have with extreme levity indulged so far as to attempt to found a system of natural philosophy on the first chapter of Genesis in the book of Job, and other parts of the sacred writings, seeking for the dead among the living, which also makes the inhibition and repression of it the more important, because from this unwholesome mixture of things human and divine, there arises not only a fantastic philosophy, but also an heretical religion. Very meet it is, therefore, that we be sober-minded, and give to faith that only which is faith's. And he was speaking very cautiously there himself, because a man like Bacon had no real belief, as all nobility have no belief in the religions that are given to the people. They're given a more esoteric understanding, and they're well aware, and they're taught that since childhood, that religion is for control, to keep the public under control of the dominant minority. And it's the same in every single culture. People who point fingers all over the world often have lots of material, true material, to go by. It's the Jews, it's the Jesuits, it's the fundamental Christians, it's the Muslims, it's the Islam. And they've got it all partly right, because at the top of all these groups, you have the mystery religion running them, and the mystery religion are a brotherhood worldwide, and always have been. That's the trick of it. That's why Mystery Babylon was called Mystery Babylon. To try and define it was difficult. They had many priesthoods, all specialized in particular areas. They were not based only in Babylon, they were all over the ancient world, in the capital cities. So some people would say, oh, it's this priesthood or it's that priesthood that's behind the turmoil that Babylon also experienced. and they're partly right. But the rest of it is, as I say, Mystery Babylon was a complete system where everyone was fighting everyone else and never guessing the real reasons behind their fighting and who was manipulating both sides or all sides. Mystery Babylon had 1,000 faces. ISIS had 1,000 faces. The Mother Lodge is always called the Mother Lodge. The religion itself is the Mother. That's what it means. Osiris is the body, the members of the lodge. That's the part of the esoteric. And it's never ever changed. Look at the Ismailis who ran parts of Afghanistan, of all of Afghanistan at one part, and old Persia, Iraq, and Iran as they are now, and other countries. Those guys, and it's written officially, they were in cahoots with the Knights Templars who joined them. Personally, I think they were already part of them before they did the official joining. That's how most things work today. The real work goes on quietly, and the public never are told. When something's made official, it's just an exoteric rubber stamp for the public to acquiesce to. This world is run to an agenda, an actual real agenda, like a long range business plan. And it's interesting, in Masonic writings themselves, they love to boast about being full of cunning over the profane. The profane can't figure anything out, but the wise man does. And so in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Confusion is a term often given to Satan or Lucifer, even though these were both originally different entities in olden times. The confusion, an author of confusion, was a term used. Because that's what it all leads to, is massive confusion. And so everyone fights everyone else and blames everyone else, always being partly right, because these people do fight each other. You get instigators coming in from all different peoples and instigating trouble, etc. So the public see the obvious, but they never see who's behind it, or the leaders of all these different groups, because the leaders are all part of the same capstone. That's how you run a world. That's how you maintain power over all of those in the world. And right now, the big brotherhood, not the little lowly guys at the bottom with their funny hats and their little electric cars that they go on parades with to impress the children and collect a few pennies for charity, most of which, even in their official documentation, never gets to charity. That's the outer portico, the cover for something more sinister. And any organization which must take oaths of secrecy in a temple with no windows cannot be called a charitable community organization. There is secrecy there for very good reasons. And the brotherhoods at the very bottom will take the heat for those further up the pyramid that they'll never even meet, most of whom they'll even never even hear their names of. The job at the bottom is to keep the system going. They're all sworn to this particular system. Interestingly, in the 1500s, 1600s, and 1700s, when it came out of the Rosicrucian Lodge, the underground stream, as they called it, where knowledge flowed down through the ages, it's interesting that at that time, the steady drumbeat, which grew louder and louder, was for revolution, and they were sworn to revolution. And once the last major one was over in the United States, they all were told to swear allegiance to the system that was now established. Interesting. Yet, in the conferences which were international before the American War of Independence, the elite discussed who would be the country chosen to lead the world empire. And they could not use France or Germany or Britain because they had such a history of pillaging and sucking dry nations in which they went into. They couldn't suddenly become a good benefactor. That took centuries to give that image. But at the time, they didn't have that kind of image, so they created a knight in shining armor, a new country with no history of exploitation. And the propaganda would go into work, into motion, and convince the world down through the years to come that because it had no previous history of exploitation, it was a knight on a white horse. That's how it was done. And yet Washington and all the boys were Freemasons. Benjamin Franklin wrote about it himself. He published Masonic pamphlets in his own printing press. Personally, I think he had someone else do it for him. I can't see old Ben dirtying his hands. And for all the hogwash they give us about the poor country boy, it's a complete propaganda. It's foundation mythology on Ben Franklin. He was a member of the Rosicrucian Lodge. All through his childhood, he was sent the wise sayings that he later quoted under his name, or printed under his name, from a source in England, a Masonic source. His uncles came over to visit him, not the family, but him, when he was a very young boy, because he was the one who was going to be groomed for his position in life. Going back to the Ismailis, who ran the Assassins, they had different titles they would give certain members, such as the lamp makers. Bin Laden, by the way, is connected with that. His name is part of that, to do with light, a light bringer. You also have a Leyden jar, electric, where you get light from, battery. But Franklin, the Red Way, was also a part of this. His family were candle makers, supposedly. And for a man who did so much in history as an ambassador, especially in France to America, you can look at the bill that he was presented with, and the US taxpayer eventually paid, or the government paid, for the massive palace that he was given, he lived in. The wine consumption weekly, that the crates and crates and crates of wine for all the big balls that he had and extravaganzas, and all the servants and chefs and the foodstuffs, this man did not live like any country bumpkin that I've ever met. So he's a good example of what we might call an Illuminatus. An Illuminati never began with Weishaupt. It's always been there down through the ages. In ancient times, they had their titles too. Ignatius Loyola, Loyal Fire Starter, Igniter, Fire, was also known for this. He came from the Alumbrados, which was the Spanish Knights Templars. That's a term they used after the supposed disbanding of the Knights Templars movement, the Alumbrados. Alum, light. That's why you all belong to alumni from university. You're now very bright, you see. Hence the statement by Albert Pike when he talked about everyone in the Western world being a Freemason without being going through the official degrees at the bottom. What he meant to it was the whole system that you have been given is Masonic. The rituals you have in any standard church are Freemasonic rituals, including the baptism, the candle placements. Even some religions give a new name, which is kept secret, except from the brothers. This is all ancient Babylonian mystery religion, going down through the ages to up to the present day. They use a language of symbolism. They use a language of speech, which they give to the public. We were given ours long ago. It's been updated since by the same people. It's full of coding. And it's interesting to read your newspaper headlines when you understand the codes. In fact, it's very funny at times. Sometimes it's in their names. If they've been groomed and reared for a special purpose in life to do with changing the world or the system. But it's all around you. And everyone brought up in the school system which we have, which the Masons boast about, they wanted universal education. Go back to the writings of Webster in the 1800s. And he tells you that they must create a coast-to-coast universal educational system to produce good, well-behaved citizens, compliant citizens. Interesting. When you have a universal system, there is no room for individuality. You're being stamped with the same stamp, and you are being classified as one of the herd. If you have originality in school, and I'd encourage parents this, but if they notice originality in their children, teach them, and you have to send them to public school. Teach them as much as you can in the first few years. Because the school system is so scientifically designed, as Bertrand Russell said himself, he helped to design it, that they could completely take over the mind of the child, even with a few hours in school, 3 or 4 hours in school every day. He said that the parents' input at night on morals and obsolete morality will be of no effect. So if you have children that have to go to the schools and they're very clever and individualistic, tell them to play it down while amongst their classmates at school, and especially in front of the teacher. Otherwise, they'll be picked and put on something like Ritalin. They don't want, they're trying to find those with leadership abilities and literally chemically lobotomize them. And Ritalin does shrink the brain. That's fact. Now, this week I've been very, very busy doing all the emergency stuff that comes with the first fall of snow and the plummeting temperatures. And I hope, as the winter progresses, to be able to perhaps go into the mystery religions in more detail and explain them on a deeper level than has been done before, way beyond what you've been told by all the authorized ones out there. And so let's all hope I have the time and the ability to do this, because it's been so hectic and busy. I'm on my own here. I cook for myself. Everything takes time. And living in the country consumes a lot of time, with clearing snow, maintaining your vehicle, and so on. And that's all for now. May your God go with you. All the best.